What?
We did a little turning Arizona into Sanderson Ford country this past week. Jennifer and I jumped in the, we call it the moving billboard, the wrapped Ford Transit for Rosie on the House, and ran down to Tucson. It's always so heartwarming to be running down the road in that thing. It's so obvious who you're associated with, and to get people honking their horns, little polite little taps and thumbs up and waves out the window. That's always so encouraging. Love that Transit. Man, so much room in that thing. Had a meeting with the guys at Rosie Remodeling, and Don has put in his order for a new F-150.
I thought you were going to say a and Transit.
And they're saying Sephora is now inherited his, and the next hire is going to need a new F-250. So this weekend, Sanderson Ford is having a rat rod car show. I think after the show, I'm going to go down there and I'm going to take a look at the car show they've got going on just for fun. And I guess I'm going to have to start shopping for the next two white Ford pickup trucks for the Rosie Remodeling, Rosie on the House Ford fleet. That's for sure. Wouldn't consider going and looking for them anywhere else other than Sanderson Ford. It's the only place we've bought a vehicle for the last 35 years. It's the only place I've recommended for the last 35 years. Jennifer and I, originally our first home was just across the street from them, and I used to walk over there on Saturdays and just dream and dream and dream. Boy, when I could finally buy the first one 30 years ago, the way I was treated told me I'm never going to need to find another car dealer, and I never have. Sanderson Ford on 51st Avenue, just south of Glendale, open Monday through Saturday, always closed on Sunday, and the Rat Rod Car Show is going on today. That might just be exactly the motivation I needed to drive over there this afternoon. Sanderson Ford.
Let's get to Bob at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Text questions can be sent to 411-923, or you can email info@rosieonthehouse.com. And I promise we'll get to our paint condition, which we were actually supposed to start that segment with. I'm always the worst one about it, but we've already got Bob on the line, so let's help Bob in Tucson. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I have a ridge vent on my house, which is fine for ventilating the attic, but it also backdrafts dust and leaves and things into the attic, and I was wondering what the solution might be.
Oh, boy. There are definite different qualities of ridge vents as to how open they are, how well screened they can be. What kind of roof do you have?
It's a shingle roof.
Okay. All right. Well, those are generally a pretty low profile vent. How old is it?
I don't know. I put them on myself, but maybe about 10 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
The ridge vent.
And yeah. Are you saying it's bringing debris into your attic because you've been up there and looked and you've seen this?
Yes. Yes, I was just up there yesterday.
Yeah, they'll.
I've noticed it before, but I thought I would see what you had to say about it.
Yeah, in those horizontal winds, those ridge vents in the earlier versions do, but they do make better grades of them. You installed it yourself. If I were you, unless it got to the point it was absolutely intolerable, I can't imagine it isn't happening every day. It's got to just primarily be happening under the strong directional wind situations. You've probably got at least another 10 years before you're going to have to address that roof again. You could take a look at some of the roofing wholesalers about the different vent caps that they make for the three-tab fiberglass asphalt shingles. All of them will backdraft a little, but so will a dormer vent. And in fact, so will the spiral vents. So the venting is important enough that unless it gets really excessive, Bob, I'm gonna encourage you just to learn to live with it. It's more important that you're venting that hot air out naturally than it is keeping just a little bit of dust and leaf debris out of the attic, which in the long term isn't going to hurt anything significant. So I think you're in good shape. I hope I helped melt away a little bit of anxieties from your heart there. But those are the kind of questions we try and answer at Rosie on the House. If you've got something around the house that's causing you a concern or a question, or you've received a quote for work that you're just not sure is appropriate or fair and you'd like to bounce it off of us, we can help you with all of those things. 1-888-767-4348 every Saturday morning from 8 to 11. Painting. Let's talk about painting. We've taken, for the sake of today's conversation, that middle bedroom, that hypothetical middle bedroom, that now you're an empty nester or at least one of the children have moved out and you've decided you can work from home now. The new COVID protocols mandated it. Your place of work allows you to work from home 2, 3, 4 days a week. We're going to convert that to an office. We talked about some tips on creating a vinyl flooring in there. Get that carpet out of there. Get a hard surface on there, something much easier to keep clean. Now we're going to talk about painting. And if it was a child's bedroom, there's a decent chance there's some artwork that may have stained the walls. There might be some marks-a-lots or some crayons of one type or another on the wall. Crayons can generally be cleaned with an acetone or a wall cleaner and get it off. But ink stains, like from a Sharpie felt tip marker, those won't be able to be removed from the paint. And you won't be able to paint over them. They will actually bleed through whatever paint you're putting over the top of them unless you properly seal over them. One of the more popular products that's been around the longest is a spray paint can of a product called Kilz, K-I-L-Z. And it's an excellent product for this. Make sure the can is very well shaken. You back up about 8 to 12 inches away from the ink stain on the wall and simply spray paint that to a point where it's adequately covered, but you're not having any paint dripping down the wall. I'd much rather you coat it lightly, walk away from it, go have a glass of tea, sit on the backyard, play fetch with the dog, and come back and put a second coat on in a half hour, than rather just keep spraying it until the paint is literally dripping down the wall, because then you've created a very, very amateurish mistake that's just going to shout at you every time you walk in the room. Now, that technique also worked very well if the kids had anything hanging on the wall that needed to come down that tore the sheetrock paper. Any of those little furry edges of the drywall paper that's sticking out, you're going to need to eliminate. Depending on the size of the problem, you can take a razor blade knife and cut those. If it's a long poster that was hanging, maybe the tear on the paper is 8 or 9 or 10 inches long, then you'll just cut a little V into the sheetrock and just remove that frayed paper edge. Maybe it's just where the doorknob or a nail was removed and now the drywall is frayed out. Well, I can tell you one little trick is just simply take, if it's smaller than a quarter, all you have to do is take a hammer and beat it, just hit it one time so it's below the finished surface of the wall, hit it, and then take some drywall joint compound with a 6 or 8 inch blade knife, float right over it, let it dry, then hit it with a little spray Kilz, and you've begun to do the preparatory work. So once we've got all those ink marks and those frayed paper lines sealed and repaired, now we're going to want to wash the walls, and we like to wash them with a TSP cleaning product, trisodium phosphate. with sponges and buckets of water, and you're going to want to clean that really good with clean water. Get it cleaned down really good. Now you're set to prime the walls. I think Romy's got a couple tricks on prepping and taping the baseboard to get nice crisp, sharp edges. But before we get to his tips on that, let's see if we can get to Marty, who wants to talk about some roof quotes he's apparently gotten. Let's see if we can help him out. Good morning, Marty.
This is Marty. Thank you, Romy. Yes. Hi, Rosie.
Yeah.
I was wondering, I've gotten three great quotes from your three roofing people on Rosie on the House.
Okay.
They've all been awesome.
Okay, great.
Getting ready to put that on before Christmas.
Okay, all right.
And here's my question. I'm going to have the ridge vent put on, and I've been pretty attentive about keeping notes every time you have a roofer roofing segment on. But, Rosie, if this were going to be your house, I've gotten two different opinions as to whether putting whirly birds on the back. I just want a nice, clean surface in the front, but in the back, this one fellow from one of the companies said, I'm telling you, I know people aren't crazy about them. They've got them painted so they match your roof, but he said those things are great.
Well, I don't think when it comes to attic ventilation, it's hard to get too much ventilation that's naturally occurring. I don't like to motorize any vents. I don't like to put fans up there. But if you're going to ridge vent, there's absolutely no reason not, while you're re-roofing, to go ahead and install three or four whirly birds back below the ridge line where they're not visible from the front. It doesn't hurt a thing. Increases a little bit of the natural ventilation. That's the way I would probably do it at my very own home.
Okay. And you did it, Rosie.
Okay. All right, Ms.
Thank you.
All right. Got to get that roof in shape before Santa Claus starts landing his reindeer and sleds on top. That's for sure.
I feel bad. I should have put a couple of whirly birds below the top of the roof. That makes
just,
perfect sense to me.
Just enough so you can't see it. The higher the better, but just low enough off the back where you can't see it. And a ridge vent then takes care of that little bit of extra on the top.
Every time I hear this show, it costs me money. Good money.
And that's one of those things you could argue all the time. And, you know, if you have ridge vent, well, then you don't need the whirly birds. And without whirly birds, that's three less. You know, that's each whirly bird is one more potential leak spot. So,
yeah.
I mean, you could argue it. Like I said, you can't really overventilate an attic. But the nice thing about the ridge vent is it's designed perfectly. You know, it's a vent along the entire length of your attic. Hot air rises, so it's naturally ventilating the whole time. And that's the reason it's the most commonly used. And there's equations as well to code how much ventilation you have to have per square feet of attic space you have. And, you know, the roofers know those regulations and can make those calculations. And it may just be that he felt that the ridge vent didn't give you enough square foot ventilation that's required by code for your existing attic. Could have been the case as well.
The important takeaway for the rest of you Arizona homeowners who are listening is never, ever power ventilate your attic. Never put any fan that sucks air out of your attic. Never. Even if it's solar powered, don't do it. Ever. Never. Now, Romy, you've painted some of the sharpest, crispest lines of anybody I know. When we get back, I told everybody you were going to share some secrets with them about how to do that. We're going to do it right after this short break.